I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about streets and potholes in Indianapolis and central Indiana. We'll talk about infrastructure challenges and what it takes to keep roads drivable. My guests are Indianapolis Department of Public Works Director Dan Parker, Indiana Department of Transportation Commissioner Joe McGinnis, and Indianapolis City County Councilor Jared Evans. To join the conversation, call 866-476-3881. Email us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI, and Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about a subject that generates a lot of interest here in Indianapolis and Indiana these days. We're going to talk about streets, potholes, infrastructure, really what it takes to keep roads drivable and communities moving around. Today on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Indianapolis Department of Public Works Director Dan Parker and Indiana Department of Transportation Commissioner Joe McGinnis. We hope to be joined soon by Indianapolis City County Councilor Jared Evans. So you guys probably are aware of this. This is a subject that people care about, but it's something that, the discussion, at least my perception has really been amped up in the past couple of years, really from last spring on into this year. What do you think accounts for the new level of interest and concern about this? I'll start with Dan, but then I want to give Joe a chance at that one too.
Well, John, thanks for having us on.
Oh, certainly.
The last 2 years, it has been, we've had the largest number of complaints since the polar vortex from 2013, 2014. And a lot of it has to do with the age of the infrastructure. It has to do with the type of weather that we've been having during the winter. Case in point, early February, we had a negative 12. Then 4 days later, we were at 60. A couple of days later, we had 3 inches of rain. Another day in February, we dropped 45 degrees in 4 hours. All of these things added together, also with the underinvestment of Indianapolis infrastructure over the last 50 years, leads to the situation that we have. There's been a lot of writing about, the Indianapolis situation, a New York Times article. Mm-hmm. What that article didn't portray mm-hmm. is the sheer size of Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. A lot of folks forget that we're 400 square miles, 8,400 lane miles of roads here in Indianapolis. So we have a lot of infrastructure for a city. For comparison purposes, Indianapolis has about 30% of what the commissioner has under his jurisdiction statewide. Mm-hmm. The issue for us over the years has been, and I'm a little jealous over this because we have about 10% of their budget. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until a few years ago that even the commissioner's budget was fully funded. Might not even be fully funded now, given what everybody wants. Yeah. But it's a situation of the weather, age of infrastructure, underinvestment. It gets what you have here. And so we'll get into what
we're going to dive into it. Joe, do you have any thoughts you want to add to that?
Dan hit it on the head. Aging infrastructure, we have some major, major swings in temperature. Last 3 winters ago, if you will, we had it was actually pretty decent. You know, we didn't have a whole lot of snow. We had many days well above freezing in a consecutive order. Last year was different, and we had a lot more precipitation last year, fluctuated a little bit. This year, I would say we haven't had as much snow precipitation, but we've had a lot more fluctuation. As Dan said, it was negative 10, negative 12 one morning, and then by Friday afternoon, it was 55, 60 degrees in certain portions of central Indiana. And so that's going to wreak havoc on aging infrastructure. So we are in a good looking out. We're in a good position. New road funding from the General Assembly and the governor, Governor Holcomb's vision from 2017. You know, we're confident that we're going to be able to not kick this can down the road any longer. We are just now coming into our second construction season with this new road funding. So we'll spend our budget this coming fiscal year is almost $2.7 billion. 92% of our budget goes into roads and bridges. We do have some operations. We have 282 facilities around the state. We have rest stops and all of these other things that we also have to maintain and take care of. But a vast majority of our dollars will this year, starting this coming year, will go directly into roads and bridges.
So I want to, before we move on and to drill into what we're doing about this and all of that, Dan mentioned the New York Times piece. Why is it that, because I travel a fair bit, and I've got to say in just about every community in the Midwest and Upper South, I hear complaints about the quality of the roads there. What was it about Indianapolis, though, that earned us the mention in the New York Times in a way that some of the other communities have not? Dan, you're leaning in. So,
well, I mean, I think we talk about it more often.
Mm-hmm.
But in the positions that the commissioner and I are in, what we have to try to figure out is what are we going to do about it? Mm-hmm. And so I know that we want to wait on talking about that. But, we're spending $126 million this year alone on Indianapolis Transportation Capital Plan, which is a fairly robust spend mm-hmm. for Indianapolis. The only times that it's ever been higher was after the city sold the water company and did some one-time spending of the proceeds of that. So a lot of the investments that we're making, a lot of them are in roads and bridges, and we're not doing a lot of glamorous stuff. We're doing, fixing bridges, fixing roads. And, the commissioner and I are in a position now where back in the day, asphalt plants didn't open until April.
Mm-hmm.
This is now two seasons in a row where both of us have had to get asphalt plants to open in February. And we've both been putting asphalt down in February. There is now a winter construction season. And I know that listeners love this weather.
Mm-hmm.
They love when it's 55 in January.
Mm-hmm.
Pavement doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not built like an accordion.
We want it to get cold
and
stay cold.
Yeah.
And then gradually come out.
And gradually come out.
Not overnight.
Boom. Yeah. And the bigger problem is, as the commissioner pointed out, we've had a lot of freezing rain and, precipitation that it's the water that is the problem. And this area of the country, we actually have a lot of water. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of groundwater. And we have issues with the foundations of our roads that they may not have in other places. And so I think that we've been focused on primarily the solutions and not necessarily, how did we get here? It's how do we get out of it?
Yeah, I think Dan, his last point was pretty much summed it up. I'll be probably not as nice, but I will say that I did not read a word of the New York Times report. Coming from a newspaper that's a few states away, I'm more focused in on what Hoosiers need, what Hoosiers demand. And don't allow the distraction from a few states away to interrupt our program and our plan. So I can tell you just this year alone, Dan mentioned it, we have a couple asphalt plants that were opened up months ahead of when they normally do. But because of the support that we've received from our contracting friends and our own forces, mm-hmm. Have been able to knock out a lot. So just at NDOT alone, This year, we've compiled over 150,000 labor hours and have put down over 12,000 tons of asphalt just this year, and $5.7 million to address just the pothole issue, which has a lot of it has been centralized here to Central Indiana. Yes, we have some of those issues in some of the more urbanized, more heavily trafficked areas around the state, Evansville, Fort Wayne, but it's not near the impact we've had in the particularly around the 465 loop.
We've gotten an email from a listener named David. And again, if our listeners want to join the conversation, they can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. You can do what David did and send us the email at nolimits@wfyi.org. He writes, I would like to say that I'm very happy with the way that potholes have been fixed and infrastructure projects are being funded since we added to the gas tax for that reason. When I heard about the gas tax for pothole infrastructure funding, I said, that's annoying, but I would like to pay it to see it happen, and it has been amazing. I work near 106th Street and Zionsville Road. Before they put more funding to fixing potholes and infrastructure, it was a section of Zionsville Road between 86th Street and 96th Street, where if you were going southbound to avoid the chewed road, drove in the turn lane for the northbound lane for about a quarter of a mile. They put more funding out there and the whole road got fixed. I've seen several more examples like this where bad roads have been fixed and even possible potholes were fixed as they happened. I drive for FedEx Ground and have been seeing road repairs in many places. I'm very happy for the way they're spending our money. Well, that's got to be good for you guys to hear.
Yeah, that's Dan Street. But David, you can't see us, but Dan and I are high-fiving each other. We appreciate your comments.
But that street is an example of, I think, something the commissioner just said, where on this winter construction, we've put down about 8,000 tons of asphalt already in strip patching on the nine segments that are done. We're got some working, although the frigid temperatures this week and snow tonight.
And it's supposed to be 60 next week.
You know, it's going to rain on Saturday. Yeah. But Zionsville Road last year was one of those roads that we strip patched during the emergency crisis that we had last year. And as bad as it seems this year, and we've actually had a worse winter, we've actually, at the city, received less complaints this year than we did at this point last year. And I think part of that is some of the things that both DPW and NDOT are doing in terms of just taking out some of the bad pavement, not going in and doing an entire street, but take out the bad stuff, put good pavement back down in the strip patching that we're doing. We did about 267 lane miles last year. Mm-hmm. We've just started in middle of February on streets. We announced nine more this morning that we're going to be adding to our strip patching program, which is essentially winter construction season. And, you know, we're hitting it as hard as we can. I will say we've actually used more salt this year than last year. And salt doesn't do well for pavement either. So I have to put that plug in because all of our crews that go out there and work, they also jump in the trucks to plow the snow and drop the salt to keep people safe when they're driving around.
Is this a little bit, though, I mean, to some degree, is it a little bit like an accelerated game of whack-a-mole here that as soon as you have dealt with one problem, about another three pop up? Joe?
Yeah, I mean, I it's possible, you know, particularly with the amount of traffic that Indianapolis city streets receive and state highways receive. You know, I-65, for example, from state line to state line, sees over 13 million miles traveled on every single day. So as you can imagine, when you go and fix, you know, a 2 or 3 mile stretch somewhere else along the line, something else is going to happen. And so until we can really get out ahead of this, which is going to take us a few years, there's no bones about it. With this new road funding, it allows us that opportunity. But again, it takes time to develop projects. It takes time to engineer, do the environmental work, let the contracts, all of the legal aspects of all of that. It takes time, but we are confident in the coming years, few years, that all almost 30,000 miles of roads that we have here at the state will be in good condition.
What's the hardest part of we'll stay focused on Indianapolis and Central Indiana? The hardest part to maintain, the most persistent problem areas, would you say?
For us, it's the major thoroughfares that lead in from the surrounding counties. Indianapolis has 187,000 commuters a day come into Indianapolis. I'd like to point out that none of them pay any taxes to the city. None of them pay any taxes for our roads. It all goes into a formula that's distributed out. And so, you know, the Keystone Avenues of the world, Michigan Road, Meridian, Washington Street, a lot of these major thoroughfares that come in, actually a lot of them are former state highways that the city has inherited. So major thoroughfares for us.
We are talking about roads, potholes, and infrastructure today on No Limits. My guests are Indianapolis Department of Public Works Director Dan Parker and Indiana Department of Transportation Commissioner Joe McGinnis. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about streets, roads, infrastructure, and potholes today on No Limits. My guests are Indianapolis Department of Public Works Director Dan Parker, Indiana Department of Transportation Commissioner Joe McGinnis, and we're joined now by Indianapolis City County Councilor I cannot talk today. That is an obstacle in radio. Indianapolis City County Councilor Jared Evans. Welcome to the program, Councilor.
Absolutely.
Evans.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Certainly. So, and I would invite our listeners to join the conversation. You can do so by sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, finding us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, tracking us down on Twitter at wfyi, or you can do what a listener named Jacob has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Jacob, you're on the air.
Hello, everybody. I had it's a two-part question. First off, I live up in Castleton. The potholes up here are awful. But as a student of engineering, the question I have for it is, or roughly is, are there alternatives for concrete or asphalt that we could use as a substitute for our roadways? And then the second part is pertaining to ice and water, how it seeps in and it's what creates the potholes. Have we ever thought about maybe angling our roads slightly to have that water offset a little bit? I can hear the responses off air, but thank you for taking my call.
Certainly. Thanks for the call, Jacob. Joe, we'll start with you.
Yeah, so thank you. I think you said he mentioned he was an engineering student, so yeah. Yeah, talk a little.
The nature of the question probably would have revealed that, too.
Engineering lingo, although I'm not an engineer. So we work closely with Purdue University. I think obviously well known for being an engineering school. So we work closely with Purdue, constantly doing research. Matter of fact, we have a program called Joint Transportation Research Program, JTRP. That we co-fund with Purdue University and NDOT what is the next thing that we need to be doing? Is it lane markings for autonomous and connected vehicles? Is electrification of the roadway for FedEx so they can drive over to the airport without having to charge their electric drivetrain that Cummins is building? There, I got our plug in for an Indiana company. But all of these things are kicked and worked over with our engineering students and professors through the JTRP. So I can tell you that they are constantly working, and maybe it is asphalt or maybe it is concrete, but what is that next material or that next mixture that could go into it that can help us along that path? I will say that when roads are designed, they are designed with a bit of a crown in them, whether it's a one-lane road or, you know, one lane in each direction or two or four or six, like 465. They are designed when we do have drainage layers within the material, within the thickness of the – all you see is the material on top, but underneath that are a bunch of different aggregates and drainage layers. But in addition, we also do have a crown in them, and we do take into consideration drainage on every – roadway that we build or reconstruct.
Dan.
Great question, because we get this a lot. And, you know, for DPW, for city streets, all the materials that we can use are approved through what the commissioner was talking about. So the materials that are used on our city streets are approved. I would also add that we have up on the northwest side Heritage Research Group. They're a worldwide leader in the materials to build streets that we work with. on, you know, what are the things that we can do? One of the things that we found out, and this was one of the things that over the last few years, this material was used. And what Heritage found out through their research is that it never should have been used in streets. There was a lot of recycled asphalt from shingles mm-hmm. that were used in streets. It was a good idea. Hey, recycle the material. It was absolutely the wrong thing to put in our streets. And for about 10 years, that material was used in streets.
Why was it the
wrong
thing?
It was too brittle.
Okay.
It was a different type of asphalt than what you normally put in a street. So a lot of streets that fell apart after using it for 10 years, and I think that's been kind of eliminated from the list of accepted practices. The thing I would say about the pitch in the street, it's actually one of the biggest problems for Indianapolis and why you see different numbers of complaints in different parts of the city. Mm-hmm. Down where I live on the south side, we actually have less complaints. We have more drainage ditches, so it does have a higher pitch to the street. On the north side and the east side, where it's a little older infrastructure, a lot of the streets are flat. They rely on gutters. They rely on mm-hmm. the stormwater system to move the water away. There's more of a tree canopy. So there's a bigger problem on the north side and the east side where there is older infrastructure. We do have some places in the city where you have farm fields that still are level with the street where we have horrible drainage. And the final thing I'd point out that, because the commissioner just mentioned it, because interstates have great under drainage, city streets do not have that. And it really comes down to cost. A lot of folks ask me, why don't we put concrete everywhere? Well, concrete's $400 per ton, and asphalt's $30 a ton. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the cost differential is such, we have a lot of elected officials we have clamoring down that want their streets taken care of.
So let me jump in on that, because we in the first segment talked about how there's been a long history, a half century, I think, Dan said, of underinvestment in roads and infrastructure here. And I know that's been an issue for you, Councillor Evans. So what I'd like to talk about here real briefly, and we've got a lot of calls and all of that, so I want it to be fairly brief so we can get to these folks, is how deep in the hole are we in terms of this underinvestment, and in real terms, what would it take to get us caught back up? I'll start with you, Councillor.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. It is something that we have, in my short time on the council, been trying to address. And we've started the Bipartisan Infrastructure Commission, state reps, state senators, councilors, regular citizens, trying to evaluate this and look at how we're going to fill that gap. The numbers that we received from DPW is that we're supposed to be spending $178 million, based on, I think, a 2016 report, annually, every year, to maintain our roads in fair condition. So when I came on the council in 2016, we had a budget of $50 million that year. Now, since that time, we've increased that. We passed a $120 million bond issuance for projects that are going to be 30-plus years of life. So we're spending, I think, $126 million this year, but we're still short of the $178 million.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That number is going to grow. In 2023, we're going to see a significant drop in our current spending if we don't do something between now and then.
Is this problem going to get worse if we don't do that? I'll start with Joe, but I'd like to hear Dan's thoughts. I mean, to some degree, and I don't want to disparage your efforts, but that's what I meant about the game of whack-a-mole.
Yeah.
You're really trying to play catch-up all the time.
As I stated earlier, the state highways, yeah. we feel like we're in a pretty good position right now. And how the road funding works, yes, it was a 10 cents extra on the fuel tax, but where the real big bulk of the funding comes from is not a new tax, but it's the sales tax that's always been levied on that fuel. So prior to 2017, NDOT received about 7.5%, 7.5% of those funds. The rest of it went to general fund obligations. We still have about 4 or 5 years left on this transition, but they started doing a kind of a stair step, if you will, and transitioning mm-hmm. those sales tax dollars back over to infrastructure. So in about 4 or 5 years, we will have received about 72.5%. So we're going to go from 7.5% to 72.5%. So are we fully funded today? No. Will we be in the next 4 or 5 years once those dollars start to transition over? Yes.
Okay. Dan.
So there's a couple of things I wanted to add. The $126 million that the counselor referenced was a part of a package that Mayor Hawks had asked us to put together to maximize the dollars that we have available, mm-hmm. not think about what we would want to do if we had all unlimited mm-hmm. money, but maximize the dollars we had available. And so we put it together. It was a $400 million package for 4 years, passed the council unanimously. And that's what the counselor mentioned is going to take us through 2022 with a real robust plan for Indianapolis. It's not permanent. It's going to get us through the next 4 years. The one thing I would point out to a lot of listeners, because I hear this when I go to neighborhood town hall meetings, is, you know, I pay taxes, you know, I pay property taxes, I pay income taxes. None of those dollars go into DPW's budget. I get $0 for roads from property taxes. I get $0 from the regular county option income tax. All of the dollars in DPW's budget for roads comes from gas taxes, excise taxes that you pay to get your plates, and the wheel tax. And just so that everyone kind of puts into perspective what each household in Marion County pays in gas taxes per month, so you can put it in perspective to what you pay for your electric bill, your water bill, or even your smartphone. The average household pays $57 a month in gas taxes, 14 of which goes to DPW. The rest goes to my friend to my right. So that's what you pay.
For those, it's a non-visual medium. Commissioner McGinnis is to yeah. his right.
okay. So it's a huge issue, this funding issue, mm-hmm. And we can get into a lot of that. But what we're focused on is what can we do with the dollars that we actually have available, because I can't spend what I don't have.
We've gotten a question via Facebook from a listener named Janet. And again, if you want to join the conversation by Facebook, you can find us at No Limits WFYI. Janet writes, a lot of other places have these freeze-thaw cycles, and their roads aren't as bad as ours. Who does it right? Who funds road repair right? Who uses the right kind of materials to fix potholes? Dan, everybody's looking at you, so I guess we'll go with you. Are there cities that
I would actually would say that this is not a unique problem to Indianapolis.
Yeah.
Okay? And anyone who says that it is has not talked to mayors that are in a current in typical climate like this with us. The issue for us is we're a lot larger than anyone else. We have more roads in Indianapolis. You know, in terms of the materials, I've been told, hey, you know, your guys don't do it right. They should do it this way and that way. I would actually argue that it would be great for people to go out and go on a crew and see what it's like to fill these holes. It is not easy. It is very difficult. I did it for a half a day, and my shoulders were killing me for a week.
Councilor Evans.
You know, and the other thing I would add to that is I think it comes back into that funding gap. We mm-hmm. don't know how other cities and states are, you know, if mm-hmm. they're funded appropriately. Clearly, in this city, we are not funded appropriately for our infrastructure, a city of our size. We, any given year, we have a gap between $50 to $110 million. You know, when this package that Director Parker was just talking about, when that runs out in 2022, that gap is going to grow to about $110, $120 million that we need to – so we've got to come up with a solution to how we're going to fund our roads, sidewalks, and bridges. It's an integral part. It's more important than just roads and bridges. It's a quality of life issue for the citizens of this city. So it's when we compare ourselves to other cities, you have to also think, well, do they have the appropriate funding? Are they rebuilding roads or are they just repaving them?
How much of this is also a product of the fact that for, again, this half century we're talking about, there have been aggressive arguments against any sort of taxation as an instrument of social good, as it were. And both parties are guilty of it. I think there could be a great college drinking game out of waiting for a politician to talk about how he or she is going to do more with less. because both parties do that. And at the end of the day, so, you know, eventually it comes to a point where you're just doing less with less, and all of that. I mean, and I should say in the current climate, one of the things, and with varying success, both Governor Holcomb and Mayor Hogsett, who are of different parties, are in some ways trying to reframe the discussion so it becomes more about a return on investment kind of thing and get themselves out of that cul-de-sac. But they're swimming upstream. Yes, they're swimming against 50 years of history. Are we running into the limits sort of that political dialogue? Is the only elected official on the panel. I'll throw it to you, Councillor Evans.
Yeah, throw the hardball at me. Yeah. Look, I think that there are a lot of things that need to be discussed with that. Revenue increases are certainly a part of that. Does that mean it's a tax increase? I think that's what, as the Bipartisan Infrastructure Commission, I think it's what we're going to begin looking at here in 2019 is how do we increase those revenues? I think it's a discussion about fairness, frankly, too. Marion County, Indianapolis, with regards to the gas tax, we generate over $160 million worth of revenue. Yet our city is only seeing back about, I think, $55, $60 million of that. So you look at the Community Crossing Grant program. That's a $109 million program. Indianapolis taxpayers pay $20 million into that fund, and we get back a whopping $2 million. So there's a fairness discussion. Even if that is to be corrected, that's probably not going to correct our situation with our roads. I think there are a lot of things that we can continue to look at before we go after somebody and hit them in their taxes and their wallets. We just have to do right by our folks in this city. And frankly, it's not that taxes have gone up so much as the cost of living has gone up. Utilities, food, everything, all those things have gone up while people's pay hasn't been increasing.
Joe.
Yeah, so you made a comment about a college drinking party that not at Franklin College, though,
no,
of course, right?
No,
as I allude to, Franklin College is the Harvard of the Midwest. Let's just get that out there.
Harvard, I thought that was Miami of Ohio.
No.
Harvard is the Franklin College.
That's exactly right. As a 2000 graduate, I can say those things. But so I can tell you this is not a new phenomenon. As Dan mentioned in the last question, Indiana is part of a 10-state region called MASTO. It's an acronym for all of the highway transportation. And I'm the lucky one to be the president this year. And so we get together and we have these conversations regularly. I can tell you that we are 2 or 3 years ahead of other states. Illinois, Michigan, Ohio, Kentucky, they're all having these same conversations that we've had over the last several years. Because they're seeing that they don't quite have the funding available to take care of their needs as a state for the next foreseeable future. So having these conversations at the federal level, just out in D.C. last week, having these very same conversations with my peers and with Federal Highway and with USDOT and members of our congressional delegation, and what is this funding going to look like in 20 years? States are now looking at what is the funding mechanism going to be for the next 2 years? Is it tolling? Is it raising the fuel tax? Is it doing this? Is it doing that? And so everyone is, except for us, honestly, right now, because we're comfortable over the next several years, everyone is kind of clamoring, trying to figure out what to do.
Dan.
You know, I think to add to the comments that the councilor made, Indianapolis is also unique in that we have 187,000 commuters a day come into our community. And what they don't realize is that their gas tax, like their income tax, goes back to the community they reside in, not to the community they work in. So a lot of times I'll get emails and whatnot from folks from Plainfield or whatever that say, hey, you've got to fix, Rockville Road because, that's the, road I take to get into Indianapolis for my job. And I'm kind of like, well, your income tax goes back to Hendricks County and your gas tax goes back to there too. So the fairness issue for Indianapolis, we're unique in the state. There's some other metropolitan areas where the largest community does have these problems, but ours are so unique that 187,000 people a day come into the county, and that's an impact on the infrastructure. NDOT is well positioned vis-a-vis other states. We now have to do it for cities and counties.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about roads, streets, and potholes here on No Limits. I am John Kroll. Please Stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about streets, potholes, infrastructure, basically the challenges of keeping Hoosiers moving around in central Indiana. My guests are Indianapolis Department of Public Works Director Dan Parker, Indiana Department of Transportation Commissioner Joe McGinnis, and Indianapolis City County Councilor Jared Evans. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. You can track us down on Twitter at wfyi, or you can do what a listener named Marcia has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Marcia, you're on the air.
Thank you, and thank you for this great discussion on funding. It's very interesting. I just have a question about I-65. We travel it a lot between Chicago, going to Tennessee, and my hope is that there's a plan to make it all three lanes at some point. I'm sure funding's a horrible problem, but is that on the books to try to make 65 a wider, easier road to travel?
Thanks
and I'll stop here and listen to you.
All right. Thanks very much for the call and the question, Marcia. Joe, I think that's yours.
Yeah, Marcia, thank you. So there is an ongoing effort, not just I-65, but also I-70 from Ohio to Illinois or vice versa. And so we have currently a couple of projects existing. One is the I'm going to go south here. So Columbus down to Seymour is about a 12 or 13 mile stretch of I-65 where we're expanding to three lanes in both directions. In addition to that, up in around Lake County or in Lake County, Lowell, Indiana area, there's another stretch about the similar length that we're also adding. It's for the most part complete. There's some touch-up work in and around the Gary area. We also, back in December, received two $20 million grants from Federal Highway Administration. So what those are to be used for is for another added travel lane on I-65 just north of Lebanon for about a 5 or 6 mile stretch, and another 5 or 6 mile stretch just north of Columbus, Indiana, down in Bartholomew County. So those projects are, I just listed off some of the projects that are currently ongoing and some of those that are going to be coming in the very near future. But there is a really strong push, not only from Governor Holcomb and the administration, but also from me and from my colleagues at NDOT to plan that out.
Dan.
You know, one of the things related to this sort of pivoting this conversation about widenings mm-hmm. to Indianapolis is that, you know, we're getting very, very selective now on the widenings that we will do, mm-hmm. Primarily because when you widen a road, that ends up adding more to your lane miles. And then you've got to take care of it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of
gift that keeps on taking.
Yeah. A lot of our widening projects are actually done through the Indianapolis Metropolitan Planning Organization in conjunction with NDOT. And, this year we were excited because for the first time we got a reconstruction project for a major road, Post Road from I-70 to Washington Street, whereas in the past we've had to put in for widening projects to get some projects done and get our fair share of federal dollars. And we're excited that for the first time we have a reconstruction project. Now, of course, it's not going to be until 2024. Which I don't know if either one of us will still be here at that point. But it's exciting that be careful what you wish for when you ask for a widening, because mm-hmm. then somebody's going to have to take care of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, real quick, John, to Marcia, she brought up funding. And so I just want to give this real quick data point. So on the interstates right now, so those projects that are existing, so these numbers are real numbers right now. An added travel lane on an interstate is $10 million per 1 mile. So every mile, so if you're thinking about that, the project down Columbus to Seymour, that's over $120 million project. It's 12 point some odd miles. It's $10 million per every 1 mile.
Wow. We're talking about roads, streets, potholes, and infrastructure today on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Jason has done and send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Jason writes, I've lived in Marion County for 17 years. And for three of those years, I worked for a company headquartered in Fishers. Although I didn't actually work at a Hamilton County store location, I still paid zero to Marion County. these taxes would have gone to local education, roads, first responders, and so on. Why aren't we putting more pressure on the state legislature to fairly tax and distribute local wages? I'll throw that one to the elected official, too.
No, I think that's a fair question. I think Director Parker sort of mentioned that earlier. But I do think to clarify, we have to remember that income tax is not something that does go toward our roads. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a fair question. I think it's something that I encourage citizens across Marion County to look for the future dates of the Bipartisan Infrastructure Commission. We're going to be having meetings in March and April. I welcome you to come and attend to testify and come up and suggest your solutions for what you think can help create revenue for our city and for our roads, because this is something I've heard talked about a lot, a commuter tax or things of that nature, and we need to hear from what is the will of our people.
We've gotten a tweet from a listener named Jim, and again, you can find us on Twitter at WFYI. Jim writes, curious, with the progression of climate change, does what makes a good road material change? An example, using material X makes sense for freeze-thaw cycles now. Would the same be true 20 years ago or 20 years from now? How does that impact planning and taxes? Oh, everybody's looking at someone else on this one.
Well,
Dan,
I won't get into the materials conversation because we, like I said before, we use materials that are approved, you know, through the research that NDOT does with Purdue. But I will say that Indianapolis just went through and passed our first, sustainability and resilience plan, taking into account what are the impacts of climate change going to be on the city of Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. And in all of our road construction projects, all of our stormwater projects, because infrastructure just isn't roads. Mm-hmm. Indianapolis spends about $36 million a year on stormwater projects. And we take into account climate change for all of our projects. We just completed a bridge project where everyone was asking us, why did we raise the bridge so high? Well, we needed to get the bridge out of the floodplain. And so you can't construct things in a floodplain when we know the number one impact to Indianapolis related to climate change is going to be more rain events. We have more 75 and 100-year rain events in the city of Indianapolis now, and it is the effects of climate change. And if you think your local street floods now or your creek floods, we are getting prepared for the effects of climate change right here in Indianapolis. It is not just a coastal issue. Mm-hmm. It affects us here as well.
Joe, you look like you have something you want to say.
I mean, my answer is a little bit broader. As I've mentioned, our research program that we have going on with Purdue take into consideration climate change, future material mix, and then things that, climate obviously is one of those variables. But so is manufacturing of vehicles. What are autonomous connected vehicles going to look like? How do we need to be best prepared for that? Electric vehicles, how do we... I mentioned earlier induction equipment, electromagnetic equipment. What do we need to be doing with the existing material to be planning for 20 years, whether that's rain, snow, ice, and 95-degree summers, or the future of what transportation is going to look like?
We're talking about streets and potholes today on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Logan has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Logan, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you.
Certainly.
I appreciate all of you having this wonderful discussion today. The question that I have is more on the broader infrastructure and not so much focused on roads alone. But in the U.S., we, of course, I see it as having a car-addicted society. We're much different than other countries. And, cars represent a very low-density form of travel. And I think one of the last statistics I looked at related to Fishers was that 85% of commuters in and out of there were traveling one person to a car. So I'm curious, from the perspective of NDOT and Department of Public Works, what the current focus is on looking at other forms of transportation. Of course, rail is one that comes to mind for me, but other high-density forms. And then looking into the future, if we see that growing here in our area, putting a higher focus on that so that we can take more of the impact of heavy freight and low density passenger travel off of our roads and put it onto, different forms of transportation and ways that can sustain that kind of traffic better.
Thanks very much for the call and the question. We'll see if we can get an answer for you, Logan. Counselor.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. As I said earlier, infrastructure is about the quality of life for our communities, our neighborhoods. And I think when we're looking at that, we have to look at how does the impact of sidewalks, connectivity, rails a part of that, or whatever the future may hold with transportation outside of cars. I think that as our community continues to grow, I think we saw a statistic that showed that Indianapolis was growing every decade by about 50,000 citizens average. So the traffic that people hate so much will continue to become a problem in the future. But I think it's definitely something that's it's important as we move forward. And we look to a 10, a 25, and a 35-year plan and how we're going to be interfacing with that.
Do you think, when we get a mass transit system online, that will reduce some of the pressure?
Right. So we're, sitting just two blocks south of the endpoint on Meridian Street for the Red Line. And so, the Marion County Transit Plan is being built as we speak. It's going to have three lines. The Green Line that looked at light rail was rejected for cost purposes. But, John, I'll be honest, when I go to neighborhood meetings, the counselor hit it on the head. I actually get more questions about sidewalks, trails, and connectivity than I do about streets. And not to toot the commissioner's horn, because I know that he was involved with creating this. The state has a wonderful program that is out, and there was a recent Star article that said about all the applications that all the communities across the state put in for trails. And, more and more people in Indianapolis want a Monon Trail on their side of town.
Mm-hmm.
And so this program that the governor announced, it was a great program on trails, and maybe the commissioner can get more in depth on it. But little plug, Indianapolis could use some of that money ourselves.
Yeah, so the trail program that Dan alluded to was our next level, part of our Next Level Connections program. And so it's a $90 million grant program. Kind of doing it off in segments. We're not doing $90 million all at one time. But it is available to communities. And when I say communities, it's plural. And so the intent is for regional connectivity. So is that connecting Fishers and Indianapolis? It's not just for Fishers. It's not just for Indianapolis. It's how do we connect those two communities? Or Noblesville and Westfield or, whatever. Pick a group of communities. It doesn't matter. And how do we connect those folks? I can tell you, I see it when I'm here in Indianapolis at our office right next to the State House. Even when it was, it's chilly today, but when it's been bone-chilling cold the last couple of weeks, there's bicycles racks. So there's state employees, and I know they're riding their bicycles. I don't know exactly where they're coming from, but I know that they're out riding. They're hitting the trails. That's how they're commuting to and from work, even when it's 10 degrees out.
Gotten an email from a listener named Rich. Again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Rich writes, infrastructure needs of the city must be isolated from politics with an independent body. The cost for maintaining infrastructure can be established by engineering consultants and integrated with GIS systems. From such information, there should be a minimum budget established that the city must spend that will maintain, if not improve, conditions regardless of the economy. It is too easy for politicians to blow their horn about not raising taxes while kicking the can of maintenance to the next governing body. If I maintained my house the way the city is maintained, my property would be cited for zoning infractions. I don't love taxes, but funding is needed. It's embarrassing when we have out-of-town/country visitors. I'm trying to wrap my head around even if there's an independent body, who appoints it?
Let me take a crack at that first.
Sure.
The last city budget and the transportation capital plan that the councilors talked about and the mayor proposed and the council adopted unanimously. The budget was adopted unanimously. We have a bipartisan working government here in Indianapolis. We are appropriating and spending the dollars we have available for infrastructure on those projects. The mayor was not interested in pointing fingers on who's to blame. It was, how do we get as much money as possible into infrastructure? And, we're sitting here, in March, the first week of March, and winter is, old man winter is still kind of kicking down the door. but we are going to have an aggressive road construction season. We haven't started it yet.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you that probably there's going to be a lot of people, given the amount of construction that NDOT is going to do in Marion County this year, mm-hmm. the amount of construction DPW is going to do in Indianapolis this year, and the Indigo construction on top of it, there is going to be so much road construction going on. Maybe if we come back in 6 months, people are going to be complaining about orange barrels.
Mm-hmm. Which they will. But that also speaks to the bipartisan commission that you've been talking about, Counselor. Where can people get more information? It sounds like there is a hunger to offer some testimony or at least come talk to that group.
Absolutely. We're finalizing the next four dates right now. There probably will be one in late March, and the others will fall into April. They could go to indy.gov, look up the council website through that, indy.gov, and we will have the dates published on there. I want people to come. I get excited. Director Parker knows. I want people to be engaged with this, to give us up their options. It is difficult. We understand that. I think a little bit about what he said there is true. There's not a lot of willpower amongst elected officials because people get angry if you talk about taxes. But I want to push back a little bit because I think we've uncovered that there's some things that we can do. There's some fairness things that we should try to address before we go to taxpayers and say we need to raise taxes to take care of this. And again, you have to understand, and I think this is the difficult part, right? I was only elected 3.5 years ago. I didn't know this then. You have to understand what are the mechanisms that fund our infrastructure. It's gas tax. It's wheel tax. It's excise tax off of our license plate fees, grant dollars from the federal level. That is what we are essentially funding our infrastructure with, and it's not efficient. It's not enough. And so I think there's a lot of things on the table that can be discussed. So I'm looking forward to it and hope more individuals show up and come with their ideas, because I agree with what the gentleman said with regards to frustration, and because politics does come into play, and it shouldn't, because this is a quality of life issue. It affects so many things, our health. I think it even plays a factor into public safety and things of that nature.
We're getting very close on time here, just a few seconds left. I'm going to ask real quickly, if someone's got a question about when the road might be repaired close to their house or in their neighborhood, or to report a problem either outstate or in Indianapolis, where do they go, Joe?
Yeah, so for statewide projects, even those that we fund through community crossings or through local program, through the MPO or through federal highway dollars, nextlevelroads.com. It is a Google Map-based interaction. You can go on there, zoom in, you can click on a dot, it'll tell you when it's going to start, when it's going to end, and in the approximate budget that we have set aside for that.
5 seconds.
Indy.gov, /DPW. You can call the Mayor's Action Center, request Indy app, get it on your phone, report, report, report.
That'll have to be the last word. I'd like to thank my guests for a lively conversation and the audience, as always, for some great questions. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.